This is Colourful.
He was born Sheldon Thomas, and he used to run something called the Brother Movement, and as Marilyn said in her email, he now runs an organisation called the Helping Hand Trust. He's on the line. Sheldon, or Curfew, good morning to you.
Curfew's no longer in existence.
I know, it's going back and back. I first met Sheldon back in 1992 when he was doing a patrol of Moss Side in Manchester. At the time, it was called Gunchester, and you were there because you wanted to make a difference. I'm pleased to see that 20 years later, you're still doing it. But what about the case of Agnesina Inokoju and the sentence to those two young men and the whole importance of sentencing and sending out a message and the fight against this kind of crime?
I mean, well, we need to first and say, well, you know, it's about time the criminal justice system stepped up their game, because really and truly what was happening, we saw young men getting released at very early stages in sentencing, you know, instead of doing like a full 10 years, man was coming out after 5 years. I know two guys that was found with guns and ammunition who served 15 months.
Wow.
And so, obviously, there was pressure on the criminal justice system to actually do better, because what it was sending was these young guys, and I'm talking from experience, because before I did the Brother Movement in 1970s, I had a gang in Brixton, okay, called the Black Mariah, and one of the things we started was, we started that gang particularly against the police, the racist police officers at that time, and the National Front. But obviously, as things moved on in 1979, 1980, and 81, with the influence of Jamaican young men coming over, they used the term at that time, Yardies.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of us broke off into criminal activities. And so some of us were used as enforcers, like myself, to you know, extract money or whatever. Now, the reason why I'm saying it, the relevance, is that I want people to understand that gangs has been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
It isn't a new phenomenon. What we have to understand, what is new, is the fact that guns are going into the hands of 14-year-olds. Now, when I was young, the older guys had the guns. They would never give me a gun.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even contemplate giving me a gun.
Would you ask them for one?
Say again?
Did you ask them for one?
Well, no, it's not a case of asking. I wouldn't dream of asking, because at that time, the people who were carrying the guns were like 27, 28-year-old big men. They weren't young guys. I was 14, 13, 14 years old, and it was just, you just didn't bother to ask, because they'll give you a boof in your head. So to me, what the phenomenon is that the age group of the guys carrying guns are younger, because they're more vulnerable now. Because back in our days, most of us men had both parents living in the house. Today, the average black family, one in two, do not have a father figure in the house.
Okay,
so
Sheldon,
there's
a
vulnerability there that is the underlying factor as to why young men are so easily manipulated by older guys.
Let me just ask you something. Let me separate out, because Dan has kind of pulled me up and reminded me that when we're talking about, for instance, these two killers that got 32 years without parole, we have to remember that for the family and the people that have lost Agnes and the people close to her, this is justice. This is going to feel great for them, and I absolutely support it. But what I'm saying is, you know the drill. I'm saying, do you feel genuinely, if you're acknowledging that the young people that are carrying guns today have a certain vulnerability about them, then is it really right that we sit down and celebrate 32 years sentencing if we're kind of saying, on the other hand, these are really vulnerable children that are getting hold of these weapons?
Well, let me put that in context when I say that. You're right. In one, it sounds very kind of, you know, I'm kind of saying in one breath, you know, there's a vulnerability, yes. But at the same time, this guy that was involved, our older gang members, they know better. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I am celebrating 32 years. I don't give a damn. In fact, I was hoping it would be longer than 32 years. But let's say I'm happy with the 32 years. The point what I'm saying is this. We have to put our arguments and discussions in context of what the situation is. When I'm talking about gang members, we've got to understand gang is a very few gangs in this country, in London, who are organised criminal networks. The gangs that we're talking about are not really organised criminal networks. They're disorganised young men full of anger, full of hatred of some sort of kind. And really and truly, they're not really drug dealers like in my days. They're just guys trying to protect their turf, as they call it. Now, what happens is, is that they've taken the game a step up by saying, well, I need this sort of some kind of weapon to protect my area. Because if you look at the nuts between Oxton or Olive Street Boys and London Fields, the beef, none of these young guys could tell me what they're beefing over. They would not be able to tell you, oh, it was a drug deal that went wrong. They wouldn't be able to tell you. All they know is they're beefing. So the question then becomes, you have to question, are they really truly a gang or just a group of young people
with different postcodes?
Group violence.
Sheldon.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask you a question in terms of everyday life? I was walking down the street yesterday and there were four kids, probably about 14 years old, on their bikes. One went ahead to look at a car, then came back. And as he's coming back past me, he mutters something. I didn't really hear what it was, but I knew it was kind of aggressive and a bit intimidating. What should I or anyone do at that point in these days when, as you're saying, they're young kids but they may have weapons? You know, they're four young kids. I'm 33 years old. What do you do?
Right, in that situation, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, in that situation, it's quite simple. We are big men. The problem is our men are missing in our community. We have men who have no backbone anymore. Now, that young kid is trying to use fear to intimidate you. What should have happened in that instance, what I would have done, was turn to him and say, hey, bruv, what did you just say? Now, he now is on the counter because he's realised you can't just mess with you because you've now turned the situation on its head. Now, I say this because I actually do it.
Yep.
And I've gone into estates with three of us, big men, and these guys try to intimidate you, but when you stand up to them and say, hey, bro, you think you can come and just step to us like we're some little young youth? When you start talking to them, that is the point they have realised they've met their match, or if not met their match, they've met big men who are not intimidated. Now, the reason why I'm saying this, I'm speaking from, I went to a funeral where a fight took place in the funeral. Now, the fight was between two or three gangs. I and one sister were the only two people trying to separate the gangs. All the other big men were so intimidated by it, they stood off afar and watched us struggling with 70 or so young men trying to us hold them off. The point I'm saying is this. We have to reclaim the streets because as big men, those young kids are in fear of us. But what happens is we think we're outnumbered because there are so much of them. I'm telling you this. Young people only operate on fear in numbers.
But it wasn't the numbers I was not worried about. It was the potential for weapons.
But I'm going to say this. There's always going to be a potential for weapons. What do we do? Do we give in to the few or do we stand strong and start taking, reclaiming back the street? Let me tell you this now. I am a genuine person that has gone onto these estates. I've gone onto Moss Side. I've gone down and dealt with the Johnston crew and the Burger crew down in Birmingham. Nothing has ever happened to me. It's how you approach these guys to make them know that you ain't no joke. And what's happening is we are allowing 13-year-olds to put the fear of God into us to the point where we say, you know what, I'm not going to get involved. Let me tell you this now. By not getting involved does not mean you're going to get off, because the very next day, a young person could come out, going to shoot somebody, and then the bullet hits you, just like that five-year-old. What we need to understand, the more we allow these young people to take control of the streets, is the more likely that you will get injured, because these guys can't shoot straight. They have no idea in how to deal with guns. And they're not really army trained or military trained. They just know they've got a gun and they feel the power. So we need to understand the concept of fear. Now, the reason why I can say this is I did it myself. As a 14-year-old, I walked around intimidating people because I realised that if I didn't intimidate them, those big men could do something to me. So what I did was use the fear factor to try and get them. So I'm speaking from experience here. And I'm saying to everybody who's listening on the radio right now, we can reclaim the streets. Stop talking this talk about young people with weapons. These young people, the minute they realize that you are not messing, I guarantee you this, They will not take out their weapon because they are now realizing they're in a real battle. Because let's be totally honest, a 14-year-old against a 35-year-old man, he has no chance. The problem has been is the perception of fear grips us to the point we say, I'm not getting involved. I say to people, the time has come for us to use and flip it on its head for what it really is. These young kids are as scared as anything. In fact, I run Gangs Line. It's the only phone line in the whole country for gang members, okay? Now, I get people phoning me up saying they want to leave the gang, but they're scared to make other members know. You can tell they're fearful. And we need to work on that fear so that we can counteract the way they treat us. Because at this present moment in time, it's pathetic the way the community has allowed these young people to take control of estates.
But Sheldon, you mentioned earlier, you spoke of them having an anger. What is it that they're raging against? Because that's what a lot of people don't understand. What is it that's in their head at the moment?
Well, what's in their head is rejection. I mean, this is an experience that I've learned from my own experience. What's happened is many of these young men have no fathers in the house. They're already angry about that situation. They may not sit and discuss it, but they're angry about that situation. Secondly, I spoke to about 20 or so gang members. Most of them told me they don't even get a square meal in their house. Let's put the concept of a square meal, a dinner. They said to me they can't remember the last time their mums have cooked them a dinner. So what they do, they hang out at chicken shops. Now, these guys' basic needs have not even been met. They said to me, the love on the street is far more than the love they get in the house. So let's have a look at the concept of what they're talking about here. We're talking about gang members, or so-called gang members, who have no family love whatsoever from their mums, yeah, because there's no father figure in the house. They're already angry at the fact there's no father figure. And so what happens is they're so vulnerable and they're looking for and craving for the family, they then align themselves with people who they believe are their family, who then uses that vulnerability against them to manipulate them into carrying guns and selling drugs. It's not rocket science. It's quite simple. Now, for me, I know this from personal experience.
But children,
I've read a book.
How
I've
did
not done no law degree or anything like that? This is a personal experience, and all I have done is looked within myself and said, "Well, that's where the answer lies. The answer lies in us challenging." The family breakdown within the black, well, I say black community because they're disproportionately.
But it's wider than that, it's much wider than that now, though.
Black people are gang members.
Yeah.
So the fact is this, if we want to deal with gang members, first we have to deal with addressing their basic needs. Because while you're going home tonight to maybe to your child to be able to cook a dinner, that young person ain't going home to a mum that's cooking any dinner for her because the mum's got issues of her own because she had the child at a very young age.
Fish.
So we're talking about more than being a gang, we're talking about their basic need is not being met at home, so we have to deal with that rejection. So in order to deal with that rejection, you've got to let them understand that's what they're angry about. There is no point in us sitting there and following these silly local authorities telling everybody, let's hold a 6-week program and knife program or a 6-week program and gun violence. That does not work.
The problem
is, to look at what is happening in the family home that is making this young person search for a family outside the home that then uses that vulnerability against him.
Sheldon, we're almost out of time, but Ugo's got one more question for you.
Just listening to you there, Sheldon. To me, I've always thought that the family life is a structure that can't be fixed later on in life. In that respect, how do we try and change that?
Well, I've developed several programs based on my own personal experience. Not to say that I had a missing father because my dad was there. I was just a rebellious, angry young person because my brother was nearly killed by 15 skinheads. The reason why I'm using anger is to show you that it isn't poverty and education alone that drive young men to violence. That's why I'm using myself as an example, because all my brothers never involved themselves in a gang, and I was the only one in my own family that did because of what happened to my brother. The point of what I'm saying is if you want to address the family, we have to look at how are we going to get involved. Now, at this present moment, I'm running an organization called TAG, Targeted Against Gangs. And what we do is we don't only work with gang members. We actually work with their families simultaneously so that we can help the mother who may be struggling because she has no father figure to help her or no one else to help her, to re-educate her thinking about what it means to raise children. Now, that doesn't mean I go in there and play God. That doesn't mean that I go into the family home and start to act like the father. What it means is that I feel that I'm part of the village. And as part of the village, it's my duty to help those in the village that need the help. So once you have put that across to that family in that way, and they understand that you're not trying to take over, they will accept your help. I am working with some of the hardest gang members out there, and people ask me, how do you do it? Because one, I am relevant. Two, I understand them. Three, I've come from that lifestyle. And four, that I don't just work with them, but they see that I'm interested in their family life. This is not a job. This is more than a job. We've got to kind of understand that if we want to try to fix the family, we've got to make it known that this is not a job, but this is a village.
It is a calling. It's a vocation. It's a life. Sheldon Thomas, thank you very much indeed. Can you give us the name of your organization again?
Yeah, it's called TAG, Targeted Against Gangs. We run the first ever gangs line. It's 0800 032 9538, and we also run the first ever gangs drop-in center in Stratford, St Paul's Church in Maryland, and we're going to be there every Wednesday to help gang members, people victims of gang rape, victims of gang violence, and their parents. So if you live in the Stratford area in East London or anywhere in East London, feel free to drop into our center. It's there every Wednesday from about 4 o'clock in the afternoon straight through, and you'll get an advice and support. And in fact, we'll be running workshops for there free of charge. No one needs to come and pay. It's open to anybody who wants to see change in their family's life and wants to see change in gang violence. That's what you have to do. You've got to step up the way you work with people to make yourself available so that people can understand that this is not a job, but this is a village thing.
Sheldon, you speak with tongues of fire. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning.
No problem.
Sheldon Thomas, live on Breakfast, and people are responding. Shalina sent in an email saying, wow, I've just turned the show on. Oh my God, who is this man? That's from Shalina.
Yeah.
And then Marilyn, I am so impressed by this man. I'm in complete awe. He is the first person I've heard who is positive and makes sense. I have to say, I am a huge coward, but I've done exactly what Sheldon suggests. But I have said, what did you say, darling? With a smile.
Mm.
In that moment, I am too incensed to be afraid. You and I just have to have the courage of our convictions.
This is Colourful.